Thank you, Greg, for reading our scripture passage this morning. Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What seems like bad manners, cynicism, or conceit is always a sign of things no eyes have seen or ears have heard. You don't know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. But ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I'm about to share some words with you that we have all heard before. Most of us probably shouted them at some point when we were younger, triggering a parent to sigh deeply, perhaps grip the steering wheel a little tighter. From the back came these words: "Are we there yet?" I got a taste of that shortly after we pulled out of the parsonage driveway for our six-hour drive to Dunkirk Family Camp. We took a left out of the parsonage, stopped at the stop sign I can see right through these windows here, and that's when, from the back of the van, came a loud, high-pitched, "Are we there yet?" I was the one sighing this time. When I was 15, I went on what was at the time the longest car trip I've ever been on. Crammed into a 15-passenger van, stuffed things in every nook and cranny. We crammed 16 people in this van, actually. And our church youth group was facing westward for a two-day, 16-hour car ride. John Dix was our driver. He was a speech teacher and this big, burly wrestling coach at the high school. And he pulled out of the church, and he stopped at the first stop sign. And I thought it would be funny. I thought it'd be funny. "Are we there yet?" Annoyed, sarcastic, he responded, "Yes, yes, we're there." It was not a good start to a 16-hour car drive. Now, the first hour or so was fun. Talked with friends. We played euchre using our pillows as a table. I got out my CD player and my huge binder of CDs, listening to my favorite bands. That was the first hour. After that was just open road. Fields upon fields, flat fields, as far as the eye could see. And so that little joke that I said at that first stop sign was beginning to haunt me as we laid over 1,000 miles between us and our destination in South Dakota. We spend much of our lives waiting. Waiting until we are old enough to go to school, then waiting to graduate. Waiting for that first job, then waiting for the dream job. We wait for the day others take us seriously, or the day we can finally say, "Yes, I'm a success." For the little things, we wait for our cars to be fixed, for house projects to be complete, staining the deck, repairing the roof, changing our decorations. In offices, at stores, on the phone, we wait. We wait for large and urgent matters in life, for test results, for doctors to get back with us. And when we wait, we also wait for treatments to begin. We wait for a partner, somebody to love, to accompany us. We wait for the end of injustice and politics that lead to such cruelty and hate. Much of our life is spent waiting. Waiting to arrive at a destination. And these simple words, words that I guarantee you shouted at some point, take on a new urgency. Are we there yet? It was Fannie Lou Hamer who spoke on behalf of all those who were waiting for civil rights in a Jim Crow Mississippi given second-class education and few opportunities to improve their status or well-being, when she said, "I'm tired of being sick and tired." Are we there yet? You know, I have a problem with Paul, who tells us a groaning and suffering creation and a groaning and suffering humanity that is tired of being sick and tired, beaten down by waiting for answers, to wait and to wait with patience. Some of us have a good reason to be upset and a strong case to be impatient. When our dreams are deferred, when the life we thought we would live turns out to have more whines, delays, and plenty of hazards to make us irritated about when will we arrive. The early church in Rome was not prepared for the challenge of being Christ's hands and feet in their community. Their neighbors were skeptic of those Christians over there. What were they doing in their churches? What were they preaching and learning about? Did you hear that they said Christ is head over all things? It's safe to say that those in Rome not only despised, but they feared Christians because they did not understand their Christian faith. And as we know all too well today, there's a real danger when the fear of the other is stoked. History tells us that in the year 64 AD, a tragedy struck Rome, labeled by historians as the Great Fire of Rome. It wreaked unfathomable destruction. And so people did not want to wait for a truth to come out, and because of fear, Rome's top leaders blamed Christians for those fires. Now, we don't know if someone who started a fire was Christian, but we do know that fear fuels injustice. This event led to widespread persecution of Christians headed by Emperor Nero, who jumped at the political opportunity to consolidate his own power. While scholars believe that Paul's letter to the Romans that Greg just read from us was written 7 or 8 years before this great fire of Rome, we can imagine that the tension already exists in the groaning and suffering Paul is referencing. The church was waiting to be safe, waiting to live out their faith, and it's safe to say this letter reveals that they are growing rather impatient about that, for good reason, too. When the life they thought had its turns and winds on the road, when delays and hazards, they find themselves in this pivotal historical moment. And you know what? The church is just tired of being sick and tired, waiting for justice, for them to live out their faith without fear. So Paul is trying to lead them as they wait. What Paul does is he reframes this winding set of delays of life they are experiencing. Persecution and challenges as not pain that leads to suffering and death. But Paul says that these are experiences, that these are labor pains that are about to reveal new life, even resurrection. Paul helps them zoom out beyond their present condition and offers a cosmic vision to which Jesus so beautifully shares in the book of John when he says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself. And where I am, there you may also be." I often read these words at funeral services, that the center of our life's journey and our journey into death leads us to the same destination. And that is always back with God, who is waiting for us. We may be longing to get answers, to arrive at some conclusion. We don't know what the road ahead holds for us. We don't know if we will wake up and see tomorrow. We don't know what will happen in this country or exactly what consequences await those who live the gospel authentically. However, we can be confident in what is eternal, which always drives towards love, drives towards wholeness and peace. Paul draws upon this hope for the early church, freeing them to continue the faith as they wait for justice in their own time. And this hope saves them. It makes them home, not when they arrive, but right now on the road. They can rest in what is eternal. Over 1,000 miles lay between us and our destination in Bone Steel, South Dakota. Looking back, I'm grateful for every mile. I would take that journey another 4 years after that. Sitting in traffic going through Chicago, I shared music with a friend of mine who opened my ears to new bands that continue to inspire me as a musician. Stopping in New Glarus, Wisconsin, to eat and devour my first bag of Wisconsin cheese curds. Driving over a large dam, provoking a stream of jokes that technically does not count as cussing, as a fish near a dam could be called a damn fish. Staying at a UCC church in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Sleeping in the sanctuary just after reading a Bible story about a man named Samuel who heard the Lord speaking while asleep in the sanctuary. Looking back, I guess Mr. Dix was right. He was right when he answered that snarky kid's question, "Are we there yet?" He was right when he said, "We are there." In community with one another, enjoying each thimble-sized blessing of this life given, that is what makes us whole. And it's available every breath we breathe. We can wait with fear. We can wait with anxiety. We can wait in boredom. We can wait by doing nothing at all. Or Paul invites us to wait with patience. A fruit of the Spirit equal to love, joy, and peace. We can wait with patience. Patient, we can love God with our whole being. Patient, we can love our neighbor as we find our neighbor. Patient, we can love ourselves where we are. For we know the destination already, and the goodness of God that penetrates all that is and will be. It's right here. And it will be here and wherever we may go. And so this week, in the checkout line, in each game of voicemail tag you play, in setbacks to your plans first made, lean on patience. When your questions are left unanswered, when politics worry you to the brink of despair, as all creation groans to be born anew, discover the fruit of patience. And remember, wherever you are, you've already arrived. For God is with you now and always. Thanks be to God.